5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen of the AFN, this is the White House in Washington calling. I present the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the Convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives. I want you to be among the first to know that I have just signed the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. This is a milestone in Alaska's history.
The corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years.
The Reverend Merkulia from St. George Island.
This land of Alaska, which thou gave to our ancestors who had come and gone before us, is now being handed to us a second time by the act of the United States Congress and our untiring efforts. A second chance is given to us by thee to be the new custodians and caretakers.
This is a very serious and important day in history. We have a tremendous amount of work to do in implementing this bill that has just been signed into law by the President of the United States. We cannot do it in a matter of a day or two or a week or a month. We're starting on a new era, the post-settlement era.
A decade has passed since Don Wright said those words to delegates attending the Anchorage Convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives on December 18, 1971. By an overwhelming majority, they had just voted to accept the terms of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, ANCSA, $962.5 million and nearly 44 million acres of land in exchange for relinquishing further Aboriginal claims to that land. The money has all been transferred to the 13 Native regional business corporations and nearly 200 village corporations created to divide and manage those assets. The Department of the Interior has conveyed less than one half of the promised land. One regional corporation made the Fortune 1000, another teetered on bankruptcy. In one region, a group of merged village corporations had profits of nearly $1 million, while its parent regional corporation lost several times that amount. During this post-ANCSA era, all corporations have expended much time and dollars attempting to decipher the Act in implementing its provisions and planning for the next decade. In this program, the last in a 10-part series, The Corporate Whale, leaders involved in land claims implementation assess the bill that Barrow activist Charlie Edwardson Jr., ETUC, once referred to as a new harpoon.
Dividing the mock talk, it's the way it's always been. Dividing the mock talk between family and friends. We're sailing towards a future, we're anchored in the past. Our way will surely last.
Inupiaq linguist Edna McLean of the Alaska Native Language Center of the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
The terminology that is used for the whale has been is being used for describing the actions or the activities going on in the corporation. Like, for instance, ningik in the traditional sense means a share of the animal. Okay. Now, we've extended the meaning to mean stocks in the corporation. And also, the same stem, ningiktok, means that he gets a share. And it also has the meaning, he gets a share of the meat. Okay, so ningiktok corporation means that he got a share of the profits from the corporation. The corporation is now your means of survival. You might say, like hunting animals was the most basic way of surviving for the Eskimos.
In Eskimo whaling, everyone gets a share of the catch. In the land claim settlement, all who qualify to enroll get the same number of shares. In whaling, the size and quality of the shares differ. The captain and participating crews get more and choicer sections, much like corporate officers. According to Ituk, Charlie Edwardson Jr., shares in the corporation are not truly equal due to the power of the Umeleks, the captains, the corporate officers.
The corporation model as it is conceived in Anxa is a democratic model, and the one that is being managed in the disguise of Anxa is one like Exxon, and they're two separate things. And so the question of corporate democracy has gone out the window.
Andy Hope III of the Sciatica Corporation in Sitka.
There has to be a consolidation between the previous Indian legislation, like the Indian Reorganization Act, the Self-Determination Act, and the land claims legislation, and we have to provide for continuous tribal economic development rather than saying, well, you guys are all going to be corporations and get out there in Wall Street and, get in there with all the banks and all the oil companies, and you're going to be just the same as everybody else. Nice little corporate Americans.
Unlike other American corporations, shareholders may not sell the stock given to them under ANCSA until 1991. Sam Keto is a past president of the Alaska Federation of Natives. Now he's their lobbyist and also lobbies for several regional corporations, sits on the board of directors of Doyon Limited and on the University of Alaska's Board of Regents.
In 10 years, the most important issue that will be upon us is when the stock becomes alienable, what will the shareholders do with the stock? Our level of concern is brought about by wondering, I guess, at this point, whether or not that stock is going to be sold. And I think that what we're approaching is the idea of providing enough supportive information and success in the regional corporations and the message to the shareholders that if they sell the stock, they sell the land, they may receive money, but land is a legacy, and that we would like to find ways for them, one, not to sell stock, but two, if they should decide to sell stock, we would like to make sure the first right of refusal to the corporation for the stock if it's going to be sold.
Amendments in the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act of 1980, the D2 legislation, give corporations that right. But in 10 years, stock in some corporations, such as the oil-rich Arctic Slope, may be worth too much for the corporations to afford to buy back. Andy Hope III.
Hell, when these high rollers come in 1991, throwing cash all over the place, do you think many people are going to have sympathy for their own corporations and sell it to them? I just think they'll go for the highest bidder. A lot of them will.
Chilista Corporation Vice President Nelson Angapak.
We are in a process of developing an educational package that is designed, hopefully, to inform our village as well as our regional corporate stockholders the importance of keeping and holding on to that stock.
Chilista Corporation is particularly interested in developing ties with their shareholders. One of the largest of the regional corporations in land area, population served, and number of villages, it has also been a leader in turnover of top management and in losses. A number of regional corporations have established separate shareholder relations departments to provide stockholders with information on corporate affairs and to keep track of people's whereabouts.
Well, I'm good with the kicker when the water is fast. I can make their snowshoes guaranteed to last. I can build me a cabin when the time comes around. There's one thing I can't do, I can't live in town.
Not all corporations are content to plan for stock retention in 1991. Some, like Kotzebue's Kikitagruk Inupiat Corporation and its president, Al Adams, are readying to prey upon those who wish to sell.
The shareholders of Kotzebue have to come up with a plan so that we will retain ownership of the stock, of the land. And by that time, hopefully our assets will be great enough that we will be able to look at purchasing others outside the region, because I know there is going to be failure with stock and land throughout Alaska. And I hate to see it happen, but we should be ready to also to look at investing outside of our region as far as land and somebody else's stock.
The people selling the stock would have been issued the shares after enrolling if they were born before December 18, 1971, the date the act was signed into law. Alaska natives who either did not enroll or who were born after that date were not eligible to receive stock except through inheritance. In many families, siblings are split, some receiving money and land and others not. See Alaska board member, former Alaska Federation of Natives and Alaska Native Foundation president, Roger Lang.
There isn't a single thing in the world that says I cannot enroll anybody I want into my corporation. Simply enroll them. You don't have to enroll them on the BIA's roll. We just issue shares. That's all. 20-year-olds are going to be a problem in 1991 if we don't do something. But I have one myself. He's 9 years old now, and he'll be 19 in 91, and if I don't do something for him, he'll kick my butt.
There are other issues to be resolved in the next few years as well. Determining whether ANCSA's jurisdiction includes the Outer Continental Shelf, protection of Native subsistence rights, the nature of the trust relationship of the federal government to Alaska Natives, the completion of land conveyances, that may take well beyond 1991, and a resolution of the interpretation of the revenue-sharing 7i provision that's had all 12 in-state regional Native corporations in court for better than half a dozen years. Doyon Limited President Tim Wallace.
When Congress said, you know, go ye into the world now and make your living, and after 20 years you're going to be like all other corporations, they forgot about 7i, and that's a tremendous handicap for any corporation to keep its overhead and do everything else, and then 70% of your profits you share with competing corporations, and then still plan for dividends. And with all the controversy surrounding 7i itself, it's a nightmare section.
For others, like Senator Ted Stevens, the dreams and the memories are better.
It's like anything else. You don't like to remember the time when you struck out. You remember the time when you hit a home run. And I think that the Land Claims Act was a home run.
Northwest Arctic Native Association leader Willie Hensley feels the game is far from won.
I think we just made our first strike. We got a couple strikes to go, and we got to get people on bases, and, you know, we're just begun.
Sea Alaska President Byron Malott tells this story.
A young Native, you know, about college age, is contemplating his future. He's walking along the beach. Comes upon the proverbial bottle, which he rubs, and out pops a genie. And says the typical things genies say in those circumstances. Says, you know, you've let me free and I'll reward you. What do you want? And the Native young person said, you know, I'm at a point in my life where I'm unsure about my future, and doggone it, you know, I'd like to be just like most other people my age in America, you know. Poof, he was wearing gray flannel slacks and a blue blazer, and he had an American Express card in one hand and a college degree in the other. And Jeannie said, well, would you like, you know, I can grant you another wish, and the young Native person said, gosh, now I'd like to have the potential to be very wealthy and own a lot of land. And poof, he was an Alaska Native, kicking sand on the beach again. You know, we have the latter potential, and Native people also have the former, but there's still promises yet to be realized.
You have been listening to The Corporate Whale, ANCSA, the First 10 Years, the final program in a 10-part series written and produced by Karen Michelle McPherson with technical assistance from Phil Falkowski. Funding was provided by KUAC sponsors and the Alaska Native Human Resource Development Program of the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. Special thanks to John Newstrom of KCAW, Patty Ginsburg of KTOO, and musicians Herbie Vent, Buddy Tabor, and Ted Wesley. Cassette copies of this program are available for $5 from Educational Media Services, SR Box 20155, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701. Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Among the most important issues facing us in the future is subsistence.
State Senator and Alaska Federation of Natives President Frank Ferguson at the opening of the 15th annual AFN convention in December 1981.
I know that we intend to fight to preserve subsistence. We will fight with everything we have. The efforts to repeal subsistence protection must be defeated. The fight is important to Native Alaskans and to all Alaskans. Because it is so important, we have made discussions and actions on subsistence the first item of the convention's agenda. Listen carefully to the speakers. And then I urge you to personally pledge yourself to this battle with everything you have. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you. Our past has been rich. The present shows great promise. The future is up to us. If we all work together, we won't fail. Thank you.
Ferguson referred to challenges to the state's 1978 Comprehensive Subsistence Management Statute. An initiative to repeal that law will be on the ballot this November, the result of a drive by sportsmen's groups. The law established subsistence as the highest priority use of fish and game in Alaska in times of shortage and required the boards of fish and game to show that subsistence uses were met before allocating fish and game for commercial and sport purposes. Those challenging the law's provision giving priority to residents who can prove their, quote, customary and traditional participation in subsistence activities claim that most people who meet those criteria are native, disadvantaging non-natives, particularly urban residents. The initiative, then, is taking on a racial core, and the tensions that are building resemble those at the time of the passage of the Native Land Claims Settlement Act. The AFN was instrumental in that fight and expects to spearhead the opposition to the subsistence repeal initiative as well.
Our first speaker is Charlie Johnson, chairman of the AFN Subsistence Committee.
We've seen articles that have called us wasteful butchers, whatever you want to, and things like that. There's been articles that have claimed that we slaughter caribou, that we sell 40,000 pounds of caribou horn to the Orient each year, that we slaughter walrus just for the ivory, that we for example, shoot cranes and geese and let them lie because we're too lazy to go pick them up. And to counter that, AFN formed a subsistence committee. We've decided that we must fight that kind of propaganda that's primarily aimed at Native people. At the same time, we do not want to lower ourselves to that kind of standard. What we want to do is to form a campaign that will bring the facts about subsistence use to the general public and particularly to the urban centers of the state. At this time, I'll turn the mic back over to Senator Frank Ferguson.
We will hear from Pat Petrovelli, who will talk about RARA's role in the subsistence effort.
Rural Alaska Resources Association was formed in March of 1979. It was formed after a series of meetings, mostly in Western Alaska. People had gotten together and they were concerned about resource issues. And then they decided that it would work statewide. So they formed this statewide organization. It's made up of member organizations, 14 member organizations, 13 Native nonprofits, and then an associate membership, Bering Sea Fishermen's Association. They meet about six times a year, and they discuss resource issues that will affect rural people, village people, from oil and gas leasing and land disposals or state land disposals and coastal zone management, and all how it relates to subsistence and the resources that villages need to for their livelihood. This year we established priorities. We went through all the issues that we're going to be working on, and the repeal initiative was the number one priority that we're going to attack. And our role, what we do is, when we meet, we discuss how things are happening in other regions, and we communicate and exchange the information. And then we try to formulate statewide positions specifically on those issues that everyone can agree on and everyone will support. And then just a clearinghouse of information so that if something happens first in one region, then we'll know and expect it in another region on how to attack it and what kind of letters and just have positions, you know, stating that this will affect all of us.
Our next speaker is Nell Zanderson, who was the key sponsor of the subsistence legislation in the State House of Representatives. Nell's is coordinating the effort to fight the anti-subsistence initiative.
I just want to say, Chamai, Ween does it, so I don't know why I shouldn't. I've been asked to say a few words about the history, and I have to leap almost into the present to talk about the history of how the subsistence effort began in 1977. When the effort started, it was a tremendous undertaking, and it took an awful lot of hard work and coordination to get everyone to understand that we had a very serious problem, that a lot of the things that we were confronted with at that time was that the commercial sports and recreation users of fish and game resources in the state were managed and had priority. And one of the things that we were concerned about, that we felt very strongly, at least those of us in the Bush Caucus and many people in the rural parts of the state told us, who were representing them, that they felt very strongly that a very significant and very important user group was being ignored, and that was a subsistence user. So in order to offset that kind of criticism that we were getting as legislative leaders, we felt we had to do something about it and went back to the people many times in hearings and so forth, also by teleconference, asking them what they thought we ought to do. And there were three questions that we asked in our hearings, and one was should subsistence be taken into consideration when land and water use is developed? Should subsistence be defined? And what should the state do to protect subsistence use? And in the answers that we got back, there was almost unanimous that they felt that the state of Alaska should take a stand and recognize Alaskan users, a user group, as subsistence users. And one of the things that was very clear was that the people did not want this effort to turn into a racial issue. In 1978, a majority of the House and a majority of the Senate adopted a subsistence law, because I think the people that are there or were there then, and a lot of them still are reasonable people. And they saw the issue for what it was, a very open and honest concern of a segment of Alaska that felt that the resources, if they weren't protected adequately, then I'm talking about the resource, if it wasn't protected adequately, the entire state would be hurt. And that was our primary concern. That was a message we got across from the people throughout the state, and that's what we put into law, and that's what stands today. That's what we stand to lose if we don't mobilize ourselves, again, become goodwill ambassadors, and in a very friendly way, educate our neighbors to how much we need subsistence. That's all I have, and thank you very much.
We have Tony Vasca representing District 17 in the State House. He will talk about the current subsistence uses.
I'd like to say Jemai only because we say it, not because Ween says it. Most of you know that subsistence activities in rural Alaska are considerable, and no amount of hamburger can replace what's harvested out in rural Alaska. The law passed 3 years ago now, almost four, because of the importance of the hunting and fishing in rural Alaska. Throughout the last 5 years that I've been working on this issue, I found out that when you explain to people what it is subsistence is on a day-to-day basis, they begin to understand the importance of it. And basically that's what I've been trying to do the last couple of years, and I will continue to do that. And with your support, I think we can probably defeat the initiative to repeal the subsistence law. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Al Adams, and Al is chairman of the House Finance Committee. He will discuss the future of this issue.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now let's talk about what we can do about protecting subsistence legislation in the future. Before the issue goes on the ballot, I suspect an issue, an effort by the minority members of the House will be made to repeal the subsistence legislation in the next session in Juneau. I can assure you that we will fight with everything we have to keep the repeal bill from passing. And I have it on good authority that efforts to force this action will be sidetracked. You are never completely sure what the legislation will do and will not do during a legislative session. But I think that we have the power and that we have the votes to head off any repeal subsistence legislation this session. If they get the issue on the ballot, we'll have to defeat them there. If they lose the election, we cannot expect them to go away. That's why it is so important to elect legislators who are on record as favoring subsistence legislation. We need all the friends we can get, and the time to get them is an election time. So I urge you all to not take chances with the people you vote and elect. Every candidate that runs for the House of Representatives, every candidate that runs for the State Senate, every candidate that runs for every office, and that includes the candidates for the governor, must go on record that they support subsistence. If they are not with us, they represent a real danger to the subsistence way of life, and we must do everything we can do to defeat them. There are many issues that together that we do not agree on. We have differences of opinion. But subsistence is not one of them. All the Native peoples share a dedication to protecting the historical uses of fish and game resources. The things that we value the most are the things that require the most from us to protect and to preserve. We must give this fight everything we have. We may have to win many times, but we cannot afford to lose once. Thank you.
Next week on Chinook, we'll continue to hear panelists at the convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives discuss the subsistence issue, the threats to existing legislation. State Senator John Sackett and Roger Lang will be among the speakers leading delegates to pass a resolution supporting a campaign to fight repeal of the state subsistence law. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson, and you've been listening to Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan. Welcome to Chinook. 1982 is a critical year in the protection of subsistence hunting and fishing rights, an initiative supporting the repeal of the state's 1978 Comprehensive Subsistence Management Statute will be on the November ballot, the result of a drive launched by sportsmen's groups. According to the results of a public opinion poll commissioned by the Alaska Federation of Natives last May, 51% of urban Alaskans favor retaining subsistence preference, a narrow edge that must at least be maintained if voters are to defeat the initiative. The subsistence issue was the subject of much discussion at the AFN's December 1981 convention, for the fight to retain subsistence preference is shaping up to be nearly as divisive as that for land claims. AFN has pledged its resources for a public awareness campaign. At the convention, President Frank Ferguson chaired a panel on the issue and the coming battle. Excerpts from that panel were presented on Chinook in last week's program. This program wraps up that panel and AFN's proposed reaction to the threat to subsistence.
For an overview of the whole subsistence issue, we'll hear from Senator John Sackett.
Subsistence is a way of life. Subsistence is our life, the way that we've lived for thousands of years. Subsistence is the way that we feed our families. We all know that. We've lived it. We live it on a daily basis. And that's why we can see that we need to protect it, because there is no alternative existing by which to continue living. That is the message that we must, in a very positive way, get across to the rest of the state of Alaska. Because any time that you have a large group of people and a limited resource of fish and game, you have to prioritize who's going to take it, otherwise there'll be nothing for anyone. And we finally got a law passed which all of us wanted. There were some minor problems with it, things that needed to be worked out in regulation, but it was workable, and everyone was satisfied. But the issue of trying to live our life in the only way that we know is never going to go away, because any time you have other people that want what you have, there's always going to be changes. And so that's why we need to, above all else, educate ourselves and educate the rest of the state. We're extremely fortunate, I think, in this state, as large as it geographically is, to have the network and the communication available to us, so that today, people that live in the urban areas have the opportunity to learn about what it's like in the rural areas, as we have, us as Native people that live out there, have the opportunity to know by traveling to the urban areas what that's like too. The friction that's caused is going to be negative in many cases. But I've learned, as you've learned throughout the years, that the one key that's needed between two people that don't get along or don't understand is to communicate with one another. And that's what we have to do. We must communicate to the other people of Alaska exactly what it is that we're talking about, exactly how we live, and why we need that protection. In the next coming months, with the initiative that is going to be on the ballot next year, you're going to find a lot of people that don't understand. And it's our responsibility, it's something we must do, to tell them what it's like. Because with understanding, and every survey has shown this, people will agree with us that we do need that protection. We need to do it as individuals, we need to do it as Native organizations, and we need to do it with the friends that we have that are both Native and non-Native. And it must be done in a positive manner. Only in that manner can we once again protect something that we must have. That's not to say that the issue is not going to come back before us next year, the year after, but I think it's something that is a part of our life that is going to continue, and we must keep it. Thank you very much.
Roger Lang.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Come on. I feel kind of lonely up here because there's Frank Ferguson on the end, probably the best senator in the state, unless I compare him to the other guy on the other end, who probably the best senator in the state. And I'm dealing with a young punk named Straight Arrow Adams from Kotzebue, good old Straight Arrow. We knew him when he was in RCA, made a political move and hit the stars the first year, Al Adams, and Tony Vasca, who took a lot of heat about subsistence in a hearings method in the urban centers last year. Charlie Johnson, and I don't know how many of you know that Martin Moore here did this years ago, but I want to kind of thank Sam McDowell. You guys better remember that name. He's the guy that's circulating the petition to repeal the subsistence law for the state of Alaska. We have never had to really battle in state in our past immediate history. What we've done, basically, is to allow the Fergusons and the Sacketts and the Adamses and the Vascas to protect us in Juneau. And it's been easy for those of us that dealt only with Washington, because they did a good job. Next year, this issue goes on the ballot. What then is the role of this group, or the people representing this group, in this new effort, this election effort to wipe out a way of life unique to Alaska? Well, I think it's very simple. For the first time in 10 years, or maybe a little before 10 years, we're going to have to unite again. Not fight over who speaks for whom, but ensure that everybody speaks to the issue. This is not an AFN fight, or a rural cap fight, or a legislative fight. That's what it's been in the past. This is a fight that will include everybody that we can think of, that each of us could contact from this room. Because if we're united, we have to carry it one step further. a major campaign in this state using television, using newspapers, using all the communications capability that we have requires significant amounts of money. We need money from individuals. We need money from groups. We need money from organizations. We need money from bingo games. We need money from wherever and however we can get it to organize this battle. We have to use every tool available to us. We need volunteers. We need volunteers in towns and villages. We need the dedication and the political skill that this group has shown its ability to rally when it had to in the past. We need to include the students that are now educated at home and the elders who still live in the villages. We have to interest others in joining us. This fight has every propensity for degenerating into the worst battle this state will have ever seen, if we allow it to. We're going to have to raise the level of the fight by interesting other people to join us. I want Rotarians, I want Lions Clubs, I want Chambers of Commerce, I want sensible people. I don't know if we can do it, frankly, because it's going to be very hard to fight a hate campaign sensibly. If we're right and we fight, I'm sounding like a preacher now, right, fight. If we get dedicated to the effort, if we overwhelmingly win the election, I guarantee you we could at least have 5 years of peace in this state. Thank you very much, and things are going to happen.
The chair recognizes Charlie.
Mr. Chairman, I have a resolution that I would like to read. This is Resolution 81-1, entitled, In Support of Sensible Fish and Game Management for Alaska. Whereas, the Alaska Native people, since time immemorial, have harvested fish and game resources and other renewable resources to meet their cultural, spiritual, nutritional, social, and economic needs. And whereas in recent years, many non-natives have adopted the subsistence lifestyle and have grown dependent on the land and its resources for their well-being. And whereas in recognition of the importance of subsistence uses to all Alaskans, the Alaska State Legislature enacted a state subsistence management statute in 1978. And whereas in recognition of the importance of subsistence uses on federal lands and in fulfillment of its trust responsibilities with Alaska Natives, the U.S. Congress enacted a federal subsistence management statute in 1980. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Alaska Federation of Natives, in convention assembled, does hereby oppose the initiative supported by, quote, the Alaskans for Equal Hunting and Fishing Rights, unquote, and be it further resolved that AFN asks all Alaskans to unite in support of sensible fish and game management. Mr. Chairman, I move the resolution.
A motion for the adoption of the resolution has been made, and I believe it was seconded over there. The question was called for on the adoption of the resolution. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. All opposed. Motion carries.
AFN Chairman Nelson Ongapuk.
It's apparent now the AFN Board of Directors must direct its management to see to it that the resolution that was just recently passed must be turned into reality. And I thank the conventioners for making such a very wise decision.
That morning, $30,000 was raised toward the campaign to challenge repeal of the state subsistence law. By the end of the 3-day Alaska Federation of Natives convention, the total approached $100,000. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.